I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the OMG MotoGP podcast with former Grand Prix rider and British champion Keith Hewan and myself, Harry Benjamin, back after, what, a week? I think a week off, yeah. So thanks to Amy Reynolds for covering. Coming up on the show, it is just Keith and I for this one, and we are going to have a look back at all things India. And if you've got questions, queries, comments, as always, you can send us an email. It's omgmotogp@gmail.com. Keith, so India, finally on the calendar. And after lots of speculation, we did get a Grand Prix. We got a sprint race. But it was an effort for a lot to get out there. But we did get some good racing and good to see India on the MotoGP calendar.
Massive country, 1.4 billion people. That Uttar Pradesh, where it was held, 241 million people just in that region on its own. I mean, it's a market that Dorna have wanted to be in for some time. It was interesting, one of your colleagues in F1 broadcasting, Karun Chanduk, said that India needs MotoGP more than MotoGP needs India. In context, it wasn't as harsh as that. I've just made that sound. But he's right in that, you know, it's a big market that MotoGP want to break into. It's a big motorcycle market that they want to be a part of. So I would actually agree with Karun in that situation. Great Grand Prix, you know, track turned out to be a fantastic track. Yeah, a few little bits and pieces here and there that perhaps need sorting for next year, which will be on the list after the Rider Safety Commission meeting on Friday night. But good Grand Prix. First turn, you know, tricky, lots of crashes and the like on that. But I suppose the things that always seem to trip India up a little bit is their way of doing business is slightly different from everybody else's. The visa situation was quite tricky. There were one or two riders, including Marc Marquez, who got there later than usual. Of course, it's not that far around the world. It's you're out of your time zone synchronization more than you'd want to be. And with the debilitating heat and particularly the humidity, not even the heat as much as the humidity, it meant they had to shrink the races slightly. Only a lap off the Moto 3 and Moto 2 guys, but they took three, I think it was, off of the MotoGP guys down to 21 laps. And it did make a difference. And when you saw the state of Jorge Martin at the end, then you realised just how incredibly difficult and draining that this race meeting would be. And they will be thinking about that moving forward, because we've seen it in tennis, we've seen it in other, you know, sports, athletics and the like, when you're put into an environment where it is humanly nearly impossible to perform at that level in those kind of conditions. So it will be a concern moving forward. But everybody got there in the end with enough time to get everything done. Very interesting to see the Twitter spat between two heavyweights of the journalistic world. Simon Crafar, a former 500 Grand Prix winner, British Grand Prix winner, of course, but back in the two-stroke days, and now Dorna's pit lane reporter. He was emphasizing the fact that he's not employed by Dorna, he's a freelancer, so therefore he's a contractor rather than that. So basically, when Matt Oxley called him out and said that he shouldn't be dissing the journalists that have been reporting actual facts about how difficult it was to get there and so on and so forth. I think Simon turned around and said, well, there you go, boys. It was a great Grand Prix in the end. I don't know what all the shouting and hollering was about beforehand in, you know, calling out the journos. And Mal Oxley took a real exception to that. He's getting a grumpy old bugger in his age, is Mr. Oxley. And he came back and said, I really take exception to what you're saying, Simon. You know, we're reporting the facts, and of course, Matt does. If you cut away from Matt's politics and you stick with the motorbikes, he is one of the most accurate and truthful journalists there are out there. And he was asking riders what they thought. And of course, a lot of that was picking up momentum and probably seemed pre-Indian Grand Prix slightly negative in the reporting department. But in the end, it all went very, very well. It was a good Indian Grand Prix. And thank you very much for having us on the map.
Yeah, I wonder with the heat thing as well, and because we also got rain too, if they might think about moving where India is on the calendar going forward.
Oh, well, yeah, sort of moving the country.
They move it a bit more European, yeah. But, you know, I've just got back from Suzuka in Japan doing the F1, and that moves next year. That's in April. So it's only, you know, less than 6 months until we're back in Japan. They moved it because of, the monsoon season.
Yeah, I think it went okay. I think that you know, riders got what they were expecting. And shortening the race was sensible. I don't think Jorge Martin would have lasted another lap, to be frank with you, the state he was in Parc Fermé at the end of it. It was remarkable on Grand Prix Day. Sprint race went according to plan, pretty much for him. But the main race, the Grand Prix on Sunday, was definitely a... Having said that, you've got Quartararo dancing all the way over to the fence, chucking his gloves and his knee sliders into the crowd. You've got Bezzecchi climbing gantries. They weren't suffering from it. You know, different things have different effects on riders. You know, I haven't heard whether Jorge Martin was suffering from any other illness or something building up to it, whether he'd been drained by something else in the forerun to it. It might just be the way the motorbike was set up. It might be the way he was having to ride the motorbike to make it work, and he was doing twice the work everyone else was doing. It's just one of those situations that sometimes, yeah, even, here we go, back in my day, I remember 40 degrees of heat at Imola, first time I'd ever been abroad, and I had to stand under the... I was sick in my helmet. The heat nearly killed me, and I had to stand under the shower. They used to have showers in the pit block back then, and just run a cold tap over my head, fully clothed, just to try and bring the core temperature down. Once your core temperature reaches a certain temperature, you're in trouble. You're in big trouble. I mean, Jorge Martin needed a medic on. You know, Chartra was there to kind of look him in the eye and see whether he'd got a major problem, and he had for a moment. But once they, you know, and you often see, you know, like wheelie bins. Yeah, some people are too big to get in a wheelie bin, but generally motorbike racers are pretty good for it. So you'd have to have a double stack for you. That's 6'5" of you. but a wheelie bin full of cold water is what you do. You jump in the wheelie bin and you bring your core temperature down as quickly as you can to get yourself back working at the right frequency. So it is a major thing when your body overheats. And if you can imagine being in full leathers, boots, gloves around a bomb that's absolutely generating so much heat from underneath you as well, it is quite a thing, and not something to be taken too lightly. But Malaysia, it's been hotter in Malaysia. I think I'm sure it's been hotter in Thailand, but at the time of the year you go to Thailand, it's beginning to be a drier heat by then. And that, I think the humidity is the thing that really kills you. It's the thing that really makes the difference. I mean, as you know, I spend a lot of time in Asia, and I'm fine with the heat generally. But you won't want to go running on a soggy day where the humidity is high.
Well, I suppose one thing that the heat did bring about was an upturn in form for Honda. What was that about?
And Yamaha. I mean, I think what it is, again, everyone was slightly wary of where they'd be with data. We keep going on about how Ducati have an advantage because there's 8 bikes on the grid and they can pick up the data and spread that data out amongst all the teams. So they benefit from having more bikes on the track at the time. When you come to a new track like this, that is important. It might just have been that the Hondas and the Yamahas, you know, their base setting was quite good for that particular racetrack and it seemed to work quite well. Quartararo on the podium was remarkable, really. Marc Marquez was back on it, but it's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, we could all say Marc Marquez was, you know, riding brilliantly and all the rest of it, but Joao Mir was right stuck up his backside all the way through the through the meaningful part of the race until Mark dumped it. So, again, it question marks for me Mark's performance. You know, is he the magic Mark as he has always been for years and years and years, or is he slightly more ordinary Mark? You know, with Joao Mir, who's not had the most fantastic of years either, or physical preparation. He was right there as well. So the Honda obviously worked a little bit. Rudder was taken out with, Nakagami and the like. It was all a bit of a bun fight, wasn't it, early on? I mean, some of the accidents during the course of the weekend were, can I say, avoidable? I don't know whether I can or not. That turn ones like that, you just get tripped up. I mean, there was probably the Alcoba one in Moto2. You know, I struggle to understand, Alcoba doing what he does as often as he does what he does. And the same thing with Alonso Lopez. I mean, he's another one. I wrote down at the time, these notes get written as I watch what's going on. Bastard Lopez wiped out Dixon, lap 3. Pardon me for the swear word, but that's what I wrote down. And then I wrote underneath, very poor from Lopez, exclamation mark, but no further action from stewards. I just don't get it sometimes. I really don't. Every man and his dog was being as polite as they could be in the broadcast. I watched a couple of broadcasts just to see how it lined up with others from other countries. And everybody was scratching their head trying to work out why he didn't cop a penalty for that when he took Dixon out. You know, I don't know. I mean, still we have that grey area of stewarding. You wonder whether they've got, different cameras to everybody else. I just can't sometimes fathom it. But back to the actual sprint race and the like, I mean, great stuff. 11 laps, that was all. Down from 12 because of there were still damp patches, but it was mostly dry. So it was one of those ones where you couldn't be sure. We had a slippy grid because of that massive great grandstand on one side. You get the same thing at Sepang where the sun is the other side of the grandstand and it dries half the track. So it gives the guys on one side of the track more of an advantage than on the other side at the start because one half's dry, one half's damp. But I noticed that the mechanics were allowed to use leaf blowers and the like to try and dry up that specific part of the track so they got the traction that they needed to get off. Marini is out, obviously, because he did his left shoulder, he fractured his left shoulder. He's got a long lap penalty for it as well because he took Bez out at the same time in the sprint race. So in Bradle, Polis Bargo and Augusto Fernandez were also off at the same turn. So, big aggravation in turn one. But we've said it before, everything is down, particularly in a sprint race, down to making up positions on the opening lap. You've got to, if you've qualified second, third row, you have got to force the issue into turn one. Everything is made up nowadays on a MotoGP bike, on the brakes, trail braking into the corners. Everything else is controlled by traction control or whatever to an extent. So, you may even be limited on that side of things once you've got the traction control dial in. But on the front end, of course, it's down to you. You ain't got track, you ain't got anti-brake lock or something like that on the front end. It's all down to you. So if you get it wrong, you're going to be flying up the inside of somebody and taking them all out, which is what we saw a lot of at turn one.
Well, I suppose one of the big storylines to take away from the weekend is, with such a good weekend for the likes of Jorge Martin and Marco Bezzecchi, Pecco Bagnaia falling during the Grand Prix, that's blown again this title race wide open.
Yeah, again. And I mean, we've seen it before. He won from 90 points further back, going back to his world title before. So it's we know it can be done, and we've got a lot of races to still go yet. I think this will be playing on his mind now. I mean, Bagnaia is it's going to slowly but surely get to you. It was a small mistake, but it was another one. Like you say, that lost him 20 points at least. It was a situation where he's kind of given it back at the moment, isn't he, the world title? And he needs really to get it back under control. When we get to Motegi, you expect, again, the Ducatis to be fast there, but we've seen the Hondas work quite well there in the past as well. So, Marquez tends to pull something out of the bag a little bit special when we get to Motegi. But again, the weather in Motegi, I haven't even looked at the weather forecast this morning, but that can be fog on the mountain. It could be absolutely slinging it down with rain, or it could be baking hot. So you're trying to bet on what might happen in Motegi. We'll have Cal Crutchlow back, which will be good. Alex Marquez won't be there. Of course, he broke a... what did he actually break? Three ribs in qualifying one, didn't he? They thought he busted two ribs, but he broke three in the end in qualifying one. So Alex Marquez won't be there. Still, we were expecting the Marc Marquez announcement between the Indian round and Japan regarding where he was going. And of course, it's gone very quiet. He's played it down again, but he won't say that. I would imagine that when he gets to Japan, that's where the big talks come, because obviously he would be meeting with the Honda, you know.
What do you think's going to happen?
Personally, I had this feeling that Grassini, you know, would be a good bet. I mean, I think most people in the world would love to see him jump ship, but at the same time, he runs a massive risk. He knows how he's riding. He knows how he feels about himself. Now, if he feels that he will benefit from going to Ducati, and the Ducati is so much a better motorbike than the Honda that that's where he's got to go, then he'll go. If he feels that the Honda is probably better than the way he's riding it at the moment, then he'll stay. You know, I think there's more to this than the simple fact that Marc Marquez is a genius, so therefore put him on a decent bike and he will win races again. I think maybe there's a slight doubt in his mind if he jumps ship and he only performs the same way that he is now on the Honda, the Marc Marquez bubble will have burst. Mm. We'll see. I mean, he's a brilliant, brilliant rider and an intelligent fella, and he's 30 years old now, so he's got the maturity to work out what will be right for him. But it is bloody intriguing. I mean, I love it behind the scenes at the moment, trying to work it out. I mean, I'd love to see him go to Ducati. You know, and Grassini's bikes are going to be good bikes next year anyway. You can be fairly sure that the deal he'll do with Ducati, and you know, Paolo Giobatti, you know, one of the main men at Ducati, you know, basically said that, you know, Mark and Grassini are speaking. So we'll see how that pans out. But it's all going to hinge around, you know, Motegi. It's a Honda-owned track. The Honda Museum's there. It's a great environment. You expect, you know, all of the Honda hierarchy to be at the track during the course of this coming week. Exciting times. I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to hear anything. I think it will be Thursday press conference. Look out for an exceptional press conference on Thursday, other than the normal run-of-the-mill press conference where everybody's just asking questions of half a dozen riders. Look out for an exceptional press conference. We'll bring you that in OMG Extra.
I was going to say, followed by an exceptional OMG Extra episode straight after. It could be quite a week then. Aprilia seemed to struggle once again with heat issues, again bringing it all about. Where did the highest Aprilia in the Grand Prix? Vinales, wasn't it, in eighth, and Aleix Espargaró, even, I mean, he has apologized, I think, for his sort of angry tone and reaction after being sent out too early in qualifying, so he wasn't too happy. So a bit of Aprilia, who were looking so good, just seemed to struggle a little bit more this weekend.
I think that's the frustration for Aleix. I mean, I love the way Aleix, I mean, what you see is what you get with Aleix. He puts it out there as soon as he's a bit unhappy. I mean, it must drive management completely bonkers when he goes flying into the scenery like he did with his opinion at that particular time. But it is frustrating when you can't make a bike. Bearing in mind how close everything is. I mean, that's always the issue, isn't it? I mean, it's so tight in qualifying to between them all. I mean, a tiny, tiny improvement, or in this case, non-improvement, makes a massive difference. And when you qualify further down the field and you get clattered at turn one, or you're under a yellow flag when you're trying to make moves because people are in the scenery. And he just got frustrated with it. But reasoning again is probably lack of data. You know, it's trying to keep up on that roller coaster. We were dealing with damp patches early on in the weekend. You know, as soon as you've got a track that's evolving as well, it's how you chase that track down the evolution scale. And, you know, maybe Aprilia just weren't quite going the right way with a little bit of setup here and there. And maybe, getting back to your Honda thing, maybe Honda were better placed for that. And again, Marc Marquez has said many, many times, he arrives at a track and reaches a zenith really quickly. He gets on the pace on a new track, on a new environment, very, very quickly. Others slowly but surely. So his performance in day one and day two were really, really good. But by the time we get to day three and the longer races, everyone else has pretty much caught up. You know, some riders and teams are faster at reaching the critical point than others. And I think Marquez is like an instant explosion, isn't he? He arrives at a racetrack and he immediately finds the absolute limit of the motorbike, quite often when he's picking it up off the floor, than just about anybody else.
I tell you what, just on that, we had a couple of questions. I can't remember precisely who asked this, but why do riders really struggle?
Can't pick Alexa.
Yeah, why?
I've
noticed it recently as well, just on the coverage, and they really find it difficult.
I tell you, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I'm such a sad git, I really am. I was watching Sara Lazito, I think is how you call her. She's a brilliant, brilliant stunt lady, for want of a better phrase. She's brilliant. If you've never watched Sara Lazito, and you might not have done because she's a bit out of your bloody zone, I suppose. But she can pick a bloody great big four-cylinder road bike up. No drama at all, getting back to the point you're making. So Sara Lazito, you know, these stunters, they quite often drop them while they're practicing their life. And if you look her up, look her on Instagram, wherever you want to look her up, she's all over the net somewhere, at Sara Lazito. She's a French girl, I think. And I love her. She's brilliant. And she's always falling off the bloody thing. And if you see her, you'll get my point. She's very slight, shall we say. She's a skinny girl. She can pick up a great big four-cylinder bloody stunt
with one arm.
Well, and she don't look like she's got any arms on her either. I mean, she is a magnificent physique when you can think powder weight. She's quite. And then when you see, but I think the one that the guy who put that particular comment in, you know, picked it up on a red hot exhaust, and that does tend to sizzle fractionally.
Yeah, I think that was it was Joanne Mir, wasn't he, in India, who had as we mentioned, had a better weekend of it.
Well, the only bike you wouldn't want to be picking up is a Formula with a Moto E bike.
Oh, well, they Moto are e-bike. Those batteries are heavy.
They weigh an absolute ton, so you'll have a job to get.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Get one of them bloody things off you if it lands on you. But I mean, I'm always amused as well at the fact that they can't pick up 160 kilos or whatever it is.
Just send Keith Hewitt out there. He'll be able to do it.
Bend your knees. Actually, I still surprise people with my strength. It doesn't last very long, but it's amazing. If you've got that core strength, then it's still there. But riders picking their bikes up, it is pretty pathetic.
And remember, bend from the knees always.
Bend from the knees.
Jack Miller, KTM.
Oh.
Sprint race looked all right. Solid. But there's just something going on there at the moment. It doesn't feel right.
Jack's just a bit off colour at the moment. He'll get back there. He's got a good mentality. He's strong in his mind. You know, maybe he's been doing some extra flights and needed to get back to Australia. You know, new baby, rah, 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 rah. Yeah, maybe he's had his head turned a little bit at the moment. That'll sort itself out. Expect Jack Miller come back as we move into the second half of the last half of the year. I don't want to make a decision or make a comment really on Jack at the moment. He's not lost it. He's not become a bad motorbike racer overnight. Circumstances at the minute aren't really going with him. And like I say, everything is so tight, so close. Sometimes, done this before, when you look at the monitor and see yourself two-thirds of the way down the list, you think, shit, what you should be looking at is the time. You know, when you look at the time, you think, well, I'm only 3/10 off and I'd be, you know, top third or something. It's tiny amounts of time. You know, and how long's 2 or 3/10? You know, you can just about blink in that amount of time. It's kind of like, it's relevant, but kind of irrelevant to some extent. He will get back on the pace again. Jack Miller is a proper motorbike racer, and I've no doubt that he will be coming back. If he don't, there's a bloody lot of people waiting in the wings.
Well, one that everyone thinks is a nail on into MotoGP is Moto2 star Pedro Acosta. And it was a restarted race, but it was controlled by Acosta, eased to victory in the end for the first ever, well, yeah, Indian Moto2 Grand Prix. What did you make of that Moto2 action?
Well, it was a disaster for the Brits, wasn't it? Sam Lowe's being taken out, you know, Dixon being taken out. Very, very poor circumstances in both cases, really. But, you know, again, Acosta is the real deal. I think I put him down for winning the Moto2 series last year as a rookie. You know, he's got that kind of class about him. Then, you know, Arbolino from Joe Roberts, a superb ride from Joe Roberts as well, to come home in third place, the American, showing his true worth again. So it was topsy-turvy, but Acosta's always there or thereabouts. And it was a great ride from him. I think that disappointment for Dixon again. I mean, he's got to keep gritting his teeth and, you know, pole position and then basically, you know, nowhere at the end of the day. It's hard to take when you're that far from home and you're working as hard as he is at the moment. He's had a few things that I think actually the kind of accident, the kind of scores that he's getting at the moment are ones that are going to make him stronger rather than weaken him, because they're not his fault. It's not something that, yeah, well, he really should worry about. He just needs to get on and do his job, keep his head straight, and keep putting those times in. So we'll see. Acosta, brilliant. But Jaume Mercier in Moto3 was even more dominant, wasn't he? I mean, it's the biggest margin that someone's won by in Moto3 this year. You know, Kaito Tobo, the two Japanese riders, second and third. Again, we were really unlucky with Scott Ogden. Eyesighted himself out, took out Suzuki, looking really, really good, Scott Ogden, in qualifying. At one point, he looked like he was going to be a front row starter. He was on pole for quite some time. So Scott Ogden is there or thereabouts as well for the MLAV, the Michael Laverty team. Bit unlucky. Brits had a bad weekend in India.
Yeah. In terms of the Moto3 championship, but it couldn't be much closer after the Indian Grand Prix. Just a point separates the top three. Mazia had looked certain to take over at the top with his win, moving him on 274. But then the late exit of Viehan saw Holgado, I should say, gain a place. And that has meant it is only a point between the three. And second Sisazaki just 1 point behind. And he has 173 points. And then in the Moto2, it's Acosta who extends his leads, sixth of the season with that win in India. He's got 236 points ahead now of the former championship leader Arbolino, who's on 197. So Moto2 and Moto3 looking very nice indeed. Who else caught your eye then in MotoGP?
Well, I mean,
there were some good rides for the likes of, you know, Raul Fernandez getting a top 10.
Well, I mean, I think with India generally, I get a bit misty-eyed about things like Mahindra and stuff like that. When we used to have the Mahindra know, team that were out from India, they went into electric car stuff, didn't they? No accounting for taste, is there? But anyway, I mean, they were brilliant in Moto3. I mean, they had Bainayam, Martin, Bezecchi, Binder all riding Mahindras back in the day. So there's quite a lot of history that go back there as well. So,
well, I wonder if this Indian Grand Prix could kickstart an interest again.
Well, you would hope so. You would definitely hope so. The other news this week at the moment, Leopard has signed the rookies champion and the sensational rookies champion, it's got to be said, Angel Piqueras for Moto3 next year in 2024. So we've got another really, really bright star coming up from rookies to the Leopard team in Moto3. but other than that, excuse me, what else caught my eye? I would have said slightly disappointing in the overall trackside attendance, 112,000. Okay, a lot of people would give their left arm for that, like Silverstone. I can see Stuart Pringle listening to this and thinking to himself, well, we only have 45,000 here and our investment is huge. 112,000 over the weekend, 59,000 on the Sunday. I kind of expected more. Maybe MotoGP is about to blast in. There was a bit of controversy leading up to the Grand Prix when a misplaced map, really, on the Moto, on Dorna's site, that missed out a couple of regions in India. Bear in mind that politically, India is still quite a volatile kind of a region, an area, isn't it? I mean, you've got to get it right in India. I think India is emerging hugely over the last couple of decades as an entity of its own and will not tolerate the rest of us getting stuff wrong about India, quite rightly. I mean, their national pride is huge. And I think that in those circumstances, you know, somebody getting a map wrong, it'd be like leaving Wales off or something. You know, you'd be a bit pissed off, wouldn't you, if that was the UK and we missed a fair large part of the UK out. And somehow that went out. Now, some will say, what difference does that make? We all know all about what's going on. Well, it makes a big difference to your national pride, to the Indians. And when you've got a thing going on at the moment, I've said it several times, you know, India is a name given by the colonialists back in the day, and Bharat is the name that will probably supersede that. You know, if you had, like, Thailand was Siam at one time and changed to Thailand. We have name changes for different countries, don't we, as they sort of recover from their past and decide to change things. And I think India at the moment is very sensitive to certain things. So that was a bit of a faux pas on our part. But it kind of resolved itself. But I wonder whether that had any, you know, whether it went viral in India and whether that had any effect on the overall attendance. It may have done, it may not have done. I might be talking out the backside, but it was something I picked up on. And certainly in some of the social media channels that I was following, it was quite, yeah, there was a lot of comment, should we say, from India regarding that.
Yeah, I saw a tweet of somebody looking at the Grand Prix, the MotoGP figures for audience attendance, and then comparing it to the F1 that raced there back in 2011, 12, and 13. And I think in 2011 it was something like 95,000 turnout.
And then is that total over 3 days, or is that a day?
I believe that's. I think that might just have been on the Sunday for the Grand Prix. And then that went down for the following 2 years. So that decreased over time. And F1 had an Indian driver on the grid for two of those weekends. So look at then comparing that to the MotoGP, I would say that's actually MotoGP's coming out looking a little bit better in that respect.
Well, I think it will do as we
move on. It's a bigger bike culture out there.
Yeah, it's a massive bike culture. And obviously, you know, Royal Enfield is an Indian manufacturer. Royal Enfield bought Harris Performance Products here. Steve Harris, Lester Harris, God bless him. Steve Harris no longer with us now. Lester obviously is. And Steve Bayford, who was the third party in Harris Performance Products out of Hartford, they did a load of chassis developments for Royal Enfield out there. And Royal Enfield ended up buying the British company here to better their products out there. I mean, and you see Royal Enfield's old and new everywhere in India. I mean, it is a market. You can't say 1.4 billion people without being pretty impressed by the possibilities. So if MotoGP can get it right, if we can, and there will be an Indian rider somewhere in there that may not even be riding on an Indian license, perhaps, or you know, that we will find. You know, look how many Thai riders we now have that we didn't have really that were to the fore. You know, go back far enough, look how many Japanese riders we never had in Grand Prix. Going back to my era, there were one or two. But now you've got, you know, a succession of them sort of lining up. It is what it is. It's a great market. It's fantastic for MotoGP to be in it. I hope that everybody in India that was part of it enjoyed it. And you know, down to the marshalling. I mean, the marshalling there, you know, those guys have never marshalled a meeting of this type, of this quality, of this demanding. You know, that they did a good job considering that they obviously had some training of their own for their own benefit, and I'm sure that they travel just like other marshals do to other countries to volunteer marshalling and the like. But to marshal a MotoGP is a big deal. And they will have had specific training from Dorna people and the like to make sure that they fall within our, you know, protocols and etiquette. I think everybody did a good job in India. I don't think you could have got the first one much better than they did, despite all the negativity in the weeks previous.
Hey, you know what? It's a good little track. I was sad when it left the F1 calendar because it was a good track and it was nice to see it back on the TV screens again. Let's end, shall we, on this. If we go back to Marc Marquez and all these rumours around Gresini and where he might end up. But there's also with that talk of a bigger conversation once again around concessions and can the technical rules be changed to allow Honda and Yamaha concessions, perhaps tied into if Marquez leaves, if he doesn't. What's your take on this?
Can only happen if the manufacturers all agree. You know, it's an anomaly that I think has been allowed to happen for too long. There's no possibility of a majority situation. It has to be everyone has to agree. And I think that that makes life, when it comes to technical rules and the like. So unless you can say that, you know, one out of the manufacturers can disagree and that therefore makes a change. I don't know. It's you know, if we've got a majority situation, it adds a dimension to it where you might be able to get through a change that not everybody agrees with, but would be good for the sport. And I think that's the key here, is what's going to be good for the sport moving forward. Everybody has an axe to grind when it comes to, you know, the future. Right now, you know, you would say the Europeans have worked very hard within the rules to get to where they've got to. I mean, the investment that Ducati had put in, why would you give Honda, who've ruled the roost for so long, why would you give them a concession if they don't deserve it? For sure, concession can come back for them if they finish badly enough for long enough. Well, why would you give something away to your competitor? You know, same with Yamaha. You know, the investment that Ducati have got on the grid, 8 bikes, 8 riders, all the teams, hospitality and stuff that goes into that, you know, you wouldn't give it back to a... Okay, so Honda have got a 4-man team out there with LCR, with Lucio Cecinello Racing and the like. So there's a, you know, 4 bikes on the grid. Yamaha have only got 2 bikes on the grid. You know, Yamaha should have invested a bit more, perhaps. Mind you, we've got Cal Crutchlow back to rescue the situation at Motegi. Hope that goes well for him. I'm really looking forward to seeing Cal Crutchlow, I've got to say. It was good to see the LCR team running the Castrol colours again at, in India. Everyone appreciates the Castrol colours. Old school.
I do love a good an old school livery. Everyone loves an old schooler, Keith. Well, look, in terms of MotoGP, after the crash in the Grand Prix, Pecco Bagnaia does still lead the championship, 292 points, but is only 13 points ahead of Jorge Martin with just 7 Grand Prix remaining. So it is going to be a fight to the finish, I think, and one that will be certainly one to watch. And we're straight into a race weekend again. It's Japan this time around. Oh, maybe I should have stayed out there. Should have wangled a paddock pass for the MotoGP.
We could have spotted you one of those. That wouldn't have been any trouble at all.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that is an oversight there, isn't it?
And you could have gone to the Drunken Duck.
Oh, yes, this is your favourite spot, isn't it, in Japan?
Well, Mito, yeah, we're... I mean, obviously, Motegi's up in the hills. They chopped the top of 2 hills and made an IndyCar track around the outside of a road course as well. I mean, it's an incredible piece of engineering in a place that you just wouldn't think anybody would get permission for it. I can't imagine how they got permission for it, but I won't even go there. And of course, you've got the Honda Museum there, which is absolutely special. Anybody that ever goes out to Motegi must do that, and it will take you a day. And do it with someone like Julian Ryder, because whenever I used to stand behind, wander around with him while he pointed out, I can tell you, I remember seeing that. Good old Jules. But it is a hell of an event. But Mito is the town where we always stayed. And there's an Australian, you can't believe it, go all the way to Japan and we go in an Australian bar. And it's owned by a fella called Jamie, and he is just a great atmosphere. And of course, IRTA, the International Race Teams Association, used to commandeer the top table for the IRTA personnel, with Mike Trimby at the head of it always. And of course, Mike's demise means that he wasn't there. But Jamie, before everybody turned up, he put this big banner on the outside of the Drunken Duck, saying Mike Trinby, thank you, and from Japan, you know, a big heart and thank you from Japan, which was, I thought, a really nice touch. But we have had many bloody fairly raucous nights in there in the Aussie bar in Mito. Of course, you can do everything else you want to do as well, and there is plenty of room for that. But it's, we went for the atmosphere.
Yeah,
you probably went cultural down to the local noodle bar.
As much as we could. Although I tell you what, I mean, we had a bit of a nightmare in Japan in terms of travel logistics, but that's a whole nother story. Everything is quite far away, but their train network, once you get on a train, oh my God, they are so nice, and everything arrives on time, departs on time. They're not messy. No one leaves any litter. It puts us here in the UK to absolute shame.
There's a problem with the Japanese being as polite and as nice as they are, because we always, because we always want to get out of there as fast as we can. I mean, it's a race to get to whichever one of the two international airports you're flying out of, Haneda or Narita, I think it is, isn't it? And one is further away from the track than the other, but you can get a nighttime flight out of there. So to get out of the track, get to the hire car place, dump the car, and then get across the city to the airport is a massive bun fight. But we're all tuned up for that. And so you don't do this, folks. These are bad people that do these things, and they should be shot. You just do whatever it takes to get to the car hire place on time so you can make the train to get to the airport. And it is red lights, wrong side of the road, everything. And the Japanese just go, thank you, after you. And it's remarkable. It's like being escorted as fast as you can to dump the hire car. And every year that goes up. But occasionally, and I came across one last year, you meet someone who's not prepared for your disrespectful foreigner to come into the land and break rules. And oh my God, then all hell breaks loose. So that could be another edition, of course.
If you are Wayne Gardner, of course, Japan.
Wayne Gardner ended up in jail for the very, very thing for some time.
Oh my God!
He ended up having a bit of a fracas with a carload of Japanese people who were very polite, but of course they decided to call the police. And Wayne, being Wayne, was a bit too abrasive and pushed and shoved like hell, and ended up in jail. And Remy was. Was without his dad, which is probably a good thing to move forward in his career for a while.
So don't do a Wayne Gardner then. But if you are going to hire a car in Japan and you are there, make sure you have an international driver's license if you're from the UK, which is something we found out when we arrived. So that was fun.
Yeah, but you have that most places. What's the matter with you?
No,
they're only £5 from the RAC or from the post office.
Yeah,
now,
but no one told us we had to have an UK driver's license.
The responsibility is on the driver.
No, it's not. It's not. I'm not having that at all. Actually, I wasn't the driver anyway, so it's fine. But anyway, another story.
And there's two types of international driving license. There's one for different regions with different languages in. So make sure you've got the right one for the country you're driving in.
See, but apparently it didn't always used to be the way, apparently. A UK one could get you one, but it's since the old Brexit.
But it costs you nothing to get them anyway. There's no excuse.
Yeah, no, the cost isn't the issue. But anyway, right. Enough of that. We'll talk more Japan on Thursday, okay? Because it is the Japanese Grand Prix this weekend, and we look forward to it. But that is it for this week's show. Keith and I shall be here for extra. So any questions on Japan, get them in. omg@MotoGP. No, it's not. It's omgmotogp@gmail.com. That's the one. omgmotogp on social media. And you can leave us a review wherever you are on podcasts, players of your choice. And we'll see you on Thursday. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi,
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.